Sure. All right, we are in our economic development work session, and so I will call us to order for that. It is 1:30 p.m. on Monday, February 13, 2017, and the first item on our agenda is presentation by staff of where we currently are.
Okay. I have a few slides I'm going to share with you.
Leanne Harder and Drew Camp.
Thank you. Leanne Harder. I'm going to kind of frame it, the past, present, and then the future. The past, I want to just talk about planning and partnerships, what got us to where we are right now, and then a little bit of information about the formation of the Story County Economic Development Group. Please stop me at any time with any questions or any requests for something I'm not covered. Starting with the planning and partnerships, really, this is an image on the screen that should look fairly familiar. It's one that we use throughout the entire C2C plan. But it starts at the bottom, and Story County first adopted land, did a land use study in 1957. So 50, 60 years ago now. That land use study in and of itself was an economic development plan and an approach to how we went forward in Story County, but specifically for unincorporated Story County. Throughout that, we did zoning, we did various elements, but they were all really really geared towards land use and land use development. Then in 2010, we started an initiative called Local Foods and Farms, Growing Story County. We looked at the ability to have a food shed wherein we could capture, encourage and capture the local food system development. These were all then precursors. But dating back a little bit earlier than that, the Story County Economic Development Group, that was formed in the early 1990s. The average annual amounts, and I talked to Lisa a little bit ago, and she has them for me. They aren't necessarily the budgeted amounts, but the average annual amounts from the 1990s to, it was 1992 through 2012, was about $50,000, fluctuated in within thousands of that dollar amount. That amount was actually increased in, to $100,000 in 2012. When they were formed, they had bylaws and guidelines, but primarily it was for the annual allocation to communities and some small projects. That amount.
And let me just add there that the average budgeted amount during that time from the Board of Supervisors was about $75,000, but only about $50,000 of it was typically used.
Right.
In 2012, we increased that budgeted amount to $100,000, and in fact, we're seeing almost all of the $100,000 used. Sorry.
May I ask why, when it was at $50,000, was it not all used?
Well, it was at $75,000.
$75,000, sorry.
And I assume, and I haven't gone back to look at this, but I would bet you, Morris, that it was originally in the early 90s, it was set at $50,000. And at some point after that, it was increased to 75, but nobody bothered to share that with the economics. And that's a complete assumption on my part, but it just makes sense for the way it flowed.
Okay,
there are a couple anomalies in the 95, 96, 97 budget season, or fiscal years. I'm sorry, yeah, 96, 97, 97, 98. 96, 97, it was 67,000 that was spent. And 98, 68,000. Then it went back down to 46,000.
Right.
So there was, I mean, we could look back through the record, see what triggered it to be increased those 2 years, but other than that, they really do remain consistent around that 50,000 mark.
Thanks.
Until you get to the 11, 12, and that's where it bumps up. On this, though, until really 2012, the Board of Supervisors really did not have a, I don't want to say a role, because they were the funder of the Story County Economic Development Group. But the discussions were less formal than they are today, is maybe the best way to say it. And so starting in 2012 with the increase in funding and budgeting amounts, some more formalization was brought to the Story County Economic Development Group. Gets us to the present. And you have a copy of, it says conclusion on the top. I'm going to start with the CPAT report.
Deb, if you want copies, it's all up here too.
The community planning assistance team we had done in 2011. And what this is part of the report. Can you guys see with the lights down? Okay, or do you need me to turn one light up?
I'm fine. Okay. Anybody else need it?
Absolutely, if you're here.
You want to give us one row of lights?
Thank you. Okay, thank you. So if you look at the summary of CPAT recommendations, I'm not going to go line by line, but as you glance down, we can check off nearly every single one of these in some fashion. These were all the recommendations that the CPAT outlined, and the team strongly encouraged Story County and the board to consider, again, from a quick to a long time frame, so 6 months to 5 years. What we didn't do, and was specifically page 37, economic gardening program. Story County did not lead that, but I think that's part of the initiatives that have been underway through AEDC, so you can say there are arrangements.
And UNI, the Business and Community Services at University of Northern Iowa, has a formal program for that with a formal staff, a full-time staffer for it.
And then economic development audit of county policies and plans, and zoning audits. Those are both strategies in the C2C plan that are in my work program and the planning development program work program for this calendar year.
Actually, I am going to ask you to go back here.
Okay.
All right, just quickly. We have the facade program. We did symbolic restructuring.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Story County Planning and Zoning used to be, Story County Planning and Development used to be Planning and Zoning.
Okay.
The idea was planning and zoning, definitely the word zoning has some negative connotations. And so the board actually took suggestion to go to planning and development.
Okay, got it.
Just go one at a time.
Okay. And then the community vision plan, that's when we brought you and I in. And then that set the foundation for the C2C plan, which is a coordinated long-range plan and city agreements. And throughout that, too, we updated our hazard mitigation plan. That was multi-jurisdictional, and that would then fold into a component of that as well. The strategic economic entity partnerships, I checked that one off with our contract with AEDC, and then the stronger partnerships that have come from that. Economic gardening, we've already talked about, and the economic development audit of county policies. And plans, that is one that is on my work program for this year. Industrial commercial land inventory is something I do annually. Doesn't really change that much for unincorporated areas of Story County. Infill development strategy we have not addressed. And honestly, when you look at the ability to affect land use from your roles, infill development, when you're talking about unincorporated Story County, is a little bit different than inside cities. So that's maybe a little bit larger than what they intended. Research park technical assistance. We definitely did help fund improvements, or in the process of the improvements of the research park with the Tedesco. I'm going to just call it Tedesco Park. It's a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Zoning audits, I've already mentioned. The downtown facade architectural study, we did not take that one on. The county CIP, yes. Strategic investment plan, yes, that's a strategic plan. Trails master plan is folded into the C2C plan. Establishing a building code, we had a conversation with the board and it was decided at that time not to go forward with the building code. So that discussion's been had. We haven't really done anything with the energy efficiency unified marketing campaign. The alternate energy code audit allow WEX in all zoning districts. We did that. And if you read under the text to the right, even looked at solar, which we definitely have done now. Economic development coordinator position, which is the gentleman to my right. The way that Story County addressed that, rather than adding one new FTE to county staff, it was the contractual arrangement. The outreach program is a little bit of my position as well, and then combining the PNC with Board of Adjustment, State Code of Iowa does not allow that authority. So that was never really on the table. Does that help? That's our report card. And what's interesting is this is what I'll be presenting in New York in May. And I've talked to the others with whom I am presenting, and no one has achieved the degree of success that we have. I'm very proud of that.
Mm-hmm. Should be.
Okay, then Story County Economic Development Group changes, as the board well knows, increase in funding, but then also last fall, the bylaws and the guidelines were amended to kind of bring more in line with...
And we don't have a piece of paper on this.
No, you don't.
Okay.
No, you don't have a copy of those. I can get those.
That's okay. Yep. If anybody wants to see it, we have a copy of those. But go. I just wanted... Everybody was shuffling a little bit looking for...
Yeah, no, I didn't think we had it.
No, I didn't give you that. And probably some of the biggest changes are in that is defining that we have a fiscal year that we operate under, which is the same as the county's fiscal year. Identifying the representatives from each community and how that process is outlined, and having ex officio members with the Conservation and Planning and Zoning Commission serving on the Story County Economic Development Group, the project guidelines.
The elected offices within it.
The elected offices, and then also recognizing that as an offshoot of Story County, it needs to follow open records and open right and open meetings laws, and outlining all that in there. So those were done and approved in October, and I think to you guys in board in December, November, December.
And that's the first time that group has looked at their bylaws since they were formed in the early 90s.
And what's unfortunate about that is no one had an accurate representation of what the original bylaws were. There was a page and a half or so missing that that's where we added some new language to make it meet today's reality, because we didn't know what it said. And then funding and programs. I guess I had slides on this, I forgot to. You do have a sheet on the first one, the Government Restructuring Committee. That's where it says, bottom page 17, it says one-stop permitting and licensing.
Mm-hmm.
These are the recommendations out of the Government Restructuring Committee report that came out in 2012. They addressed the necessary role of Story County Economic Development and had some action steps that looked at that as well. So those really did kind of replicate or refer back to the CPAT report too. Then strategic planning, we took that on in May of 2013. First strategic plan went May of fiscal year 13 to 15, and then the board did updated the one last August, and we're running until 2018 on the current one that's on the board back here. First CIP capital improvements plan was adopted following the May 2013 strategic plan adoption. So you see how it's falling in place, each and every one, and it goes back to then that a lot of the CPAT report. The facade grant program we put in place in 2014, tweaked it last summer to remove the ongoing annual deadline. We have the ADC, the Urban Renewal Area Program, which we'll talk about here at the end, but that really came as we recognized the potential with the wind turbines in Northeast Story County, and one now throughout Story County, and the revenue associated with that for possible economic development projects. The ADC contracts were formulated following a request for proposals in 2014 and have been, Drew came on board in 2014, July?
13 of July.
I'm a year behind on that. In 2013, and then we started with the workforce development 2 years later.
Now, we do those yearly.
Yep.
Okay, but is there something in the contract about every so often going out on new proposals?
The rebid?
No. And I did want to provide you an update. Angie Dorenkamp, who is the Director of Workforce Solutions, her last day, she started at Kinsler Construction today. Her last day was Friday. So, yeah, so Peter Ampey is actually, he's been with our office since a year and a half. He was an intern for us back when I first started, and he's now taken over the day-to-day operations of workforce development as we look for a new director. That's what he kind of came on for originally back about a year and a half ago. And then Angie, we found out Angie, and then she took it over, and now he's kind of running it once again with help from myself and Dan and others.
Also, when do we start formulating the any new terms we want to put into that contract? Because I assume the board will have to have a discussion. So what's the time frame on that?
See, in the past couple of years, I've worked hand-in-hand with Dan in our county attorney's office. Usually the end of, middle of April, I think, is when I started that discussion.
I think you'll probably, the board will want to have a discussion first.
C2C plan, you're well aware of, and that'll be up next year. We'll talk about that shortly, but that followed a long history of land use planning, but then took that enormous step forward and went comprehensive in that approach. The investments in the Iowa State Research Park I've already talked about, and then the technical assistance to communities, which is again on your agenda for tomorrow. So that gets us to where we're heading. C2C plan is has the economic prosperities chapter that outlines goals, but even broader than that, in the vision goals section of the C2C plan, there are economic development elements throughout the entire document. But specifically, this economic prosperities chapter talks about different programming that the board may consider. It talks about business recruitment and retention practices, foundation for economic development program, looking to making sure we have efficient resources for infrastructure and those types of study needs assessments. Possibility of a historic preservation program, the certified local government program. All these different goals are set forth in that chapter 7 or chapter 6 of the economic prosperity chapter.
Could you please remind me, is housing in there?
Housing is under the general goals.
General goals.
General goals.
Okay, so anything under the general goals is not excluded from
economic. Okay. No, and that's right. I start out by saying the entire plan itself is really a goal that if we were applying for specific grants for economic development programming, we wouldn't want necessarily just talk about Chapter 6. We'd talk about the C2C plan in its totality.
Okay.
And then future. And this is really kind of for you guys then to go forward. Our existing programs, I've listed them out. What if anything do you want modified? Are there new programs to consider that have not come to light for discussion today? And then that's all I have for you.
Yeah, so under existing programs to modify, we're going to talk some more about that. I heard Loris just say that she wants to make sure that on a Tuesday morning, probably sometime in early April, we come forward and we review our existing contract for economic development services with AEDC, and the board has a conversation about what kind of process and what potential amendments we might have to that. We get, from the Board of Supervisors' point of view, a game plan forward, a game plan for moving forward, and then we see if we can either put together a continuation of a contract with the AEDC, or if the board so chooses, I think it's a year-to-year contract, we can go out for proposal again if we, if two of three of us decide that that's the way to go.
I do just want to mention real quick, you know, we'll look forward to that conversation, but also, you know, one of the most important things to consider in the contract is that you're not just getting myself, you're not just getting Peter, you get the entire office, and that's 13 people, high expertise, a lot of professional development. Dan has a CCD, who's just ranked number top 50 in the North America for economic development. So the fact that you kind of get the whole office and staff, that's very
point,
that's
Drew,
very big.
I think one of the unintended negatives to you working as hard as you do and being so visible as you are is there is a perception that Story County's contract is for your services. And Story County's contract is not for your services. It's for the services of the AEDC. And to this point, you happen to be the main person that we see in providing those services. I think it's a credit to you. It's kind of unfortunate that that can be a negative, but it can be a perceived negative.
Yeah, on that, in addition to Drew, which I referenced him directly, I'm guilty of it too. I mean, he's my go-to guy over there. I mean, I've gone to Amy, I've gone to Dan with questions, and gone to Ron probably ad nauseum, and his viewpoint, but I mean, Drew's been the go-to for me in the past few years. But simple things like the C2C plan logo, AEDC drew that up as part of our contract. And so there, it's a broader than just the one individual.
Just to kind of give you a short here, I think that performance measures, regular reports, you know, expectations, estimates about maybe the possible numbers of people served by various activities are the types of things that I'm interested in.
Yeah, so what I would ask Laura, both you and Marty, and myself, if we have thoughts between now and call it the middle of March of what we would like to see be part of the discussion, I would ask that we get those items to Leanne so that she can share them with the AEDC and we can at least talk that. So I'm not a fan of throwing out the baby with the bathwater. And if we've got a system in place and a provider in place that we're appreciating, but we have little tweaks or maybe substantial changes that we want to talk through as part of that, I think it is completely fair and reasonable to get those to Leanne individually, and then ultimately the first time the board would discuss them collectively would be when we sit down first couple weeks of April and have this conversation. And Drew, just for you, I would think my suggestion would be that the AEDC would handle that much like it was handled when we did the first request for proposal. It'll be an opportunity to remind not only this board but the public what's involved in that contract, what are reasonable expectations, and then how we want to look at changing it going forward.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
Yep.
The other thing you do have in front of you is a copy of the economic development process and policies. So this is the, right? You have that in front of you?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
These are the guidelines and the standard operating procedure that we follow internally as staff, and then reaching out to the communities and school districts, whomever, for those annual grant programs, urban renewal area program that is run by Story County. And just some changes I just want to remind the board that there's some changes went into effect as of January 1st this year. And on April 4th, I tentatively set a meeting according to the new policy with all the invited the jurisdiction school districts to a meeting to learn what the new policies and process will be, and then due date is June 6th this year. So we bumped it up 2 months this year.
I think it's unfortunate that policies that just went into effect on January 1st of 2017 were passed back in May of 2016. So I would like to take a look at, before that April 4th meeting, us having a discussion, maybe as soon as possible, but I would like to look at amending this plan to incorporate housing as one of the areas in which we should consider to be allowed under this program, under the tax incremental financing program. So whatever you recommend, that would be the proper procedure to get the information gathered about how the opportunities to use TIF. I don't know if that's what the rest of the board wants or what is needed to consider adding that in, and also then taking a look at if that means any change. But
yeah, and so I think it's completely reasonable to have the conversation. The concern that I have with not adopting plans that take effect for the next calendar year, because TIF really runs more on a calendar year than on a fiscal year. And so I'm going to continue to be a fan, I think, of the board getting together and making decisions sometime in the spring for the next calendar year, because it allows opportunity for those projects that might come forward that next year to really develop and come forward. And my concern is if you make changes that are effective immediately, you end up with kind of almost a slinky feel to the way this is going. You have starts and stops of what is an allowable project, what kind of process and procedures the board is going to use in evaluating him. And so I just think we want to think it all the way through. But that was the rationale behind, because every year the board has done this in the spring, taken a look at it and made decisions of what kind of changes we would make for the next cycle of TIF funding. We just need to talk it all the way through. So
I'm turning over to you guys at this point for any questions you have.
Okay, Drew, anything to add before we get to full conversation with the board, if we're going to have any?
I wanted to let you know, when you talk about housing, I know that's something we've talked about before for the urban renewal area projects. Just at the State House, there's a sub tomorrow morning in the House about the Workforce Housing Tax Credit Program.
Slow down a little bit.
There's a subcommittee meeting tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock for a House study bill to increase funding for the Workforce Housing Tax Credit Program.
Workforce Housing
Tax Credit Program through Iowa Economic Development Authority. It would increase it to $30 million from 20, with that additional 10 being for rural projects. And then anything that didn't go to that, any of that $10 million increase that didn't get used would then be able to go back into the urban per se pool. It would be...
What's considered urban?
What's considered urban? The 11 counties with the most population.
So we're considered urban.
Yeah, you would be considered
urban. So we wouldn't share any of that $10 million unless there was some left.
Yeah, then it comes back in. But they are talking about having an increase. That's something they're looking at. It would be within the Iowa Economic Development Authority tax credit cap. So that's not additional revenue. It would be existing revenue, so there would have to be a reshuffle within that.
Okay. I'm still interested in, regardless of the schedule that we go forward in, but thanks, because it sounds like we'd be at the bottom of the pool for that, unless it's a tax credit.
It still exists for other programs as well. You know, with the general, the $20 million that's already out there, it's something, though, that they've had a problem with getting the money requested and having a backlog right away when applications are due. And it goes largely to the metropolitan area.
Sure it does. Yep.
Thanks.
Yep. All right. So that is, we said we wanted to have this work session to talk a little bit about where we are in Story County. And so the reality, and hopefully you guys are seeing this, is we are 8 steps ahead of both counties. We're way ahead of where Story County was traditionally leading until a few years ago. And I think it's completely reasonable to think that this board is still going to want to work on that and advance it and put our own collective priorities, input, fingerprints.
Imprimatur.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you there, Mr. Thesaurus. And we intended to make sure that today we come out with clarity on where we are today and what kind of process we will use to looking at changing anything. So with that, I'll open it up.
I would welcome the opportunity to talk about housing. I think that has its time. And I think, Morris, I would be comfortable in you bringing that to us to have that discussion. How we do, what we do with the TIF dollars, I guess we'll have that conversation at that point. But the thing is, bringing it to us is something the community has asked us to do, I guess, on a planning basis. I mean, there's a rationale and a reason why things are done on a timeline, and not the least of which we got ourselves to this point because of that timeline.
Okay. Just to clarify, when you say use of the TIF dollars, going back, saying the time process here, that if the decision is made that we change effective January 1, 2018 by adding, okay, then we'd have that'd be one part of the discussion. I've heard what Rick has said about the rationale. There's some validity there. I mean, I do hear that.
Absolutely. It's only rationale.
Right. I'm more encouraged and more concerned that to make sure that as we head into January 2018, hopefully there are TIF dollars that is included in the plan. And so do you want that to be a separate discussion from the timing?
I would want to know, and this is where Mrs. Markley should be here, at least to tell me, if we're looking at additional dollar captures, you know, this year over next year.
Mm-hmm.
Because we did, you know, we had voted here. Part of what was done by this board, or the previous board, was to bring additional properties into the TIF process.
Right.
And I didn't know, there's a little bit of lag time before it ramps up to get to full valuation, or 50% valuation.
35.
Mm-hmm. Getting there.
Yep.
And I want to know if there's any additional. You know, that's a number, Chase. That's an easy find for Lisa to give us that in regards to what that might be.
Well, and my concern about strictly the number, Chase, assuming that we keep everything the same, the percentages, et cetera, is that there might be possibilities that we need to let the communities know about, that of the percentage that we give in that major grant program, that if they're looking at being able to do something in housing, that will be money that might compete against something they do in a park or something. That I think, because you and I are on the same wavelength of that, is that there's going to be X number of dollars available. Right now it's $1,062,000 or something like that. We're pulling without the new added.
This truly is a zero-sum discussion. Because
right.
You have a finite pool, so if,
right.
if you carve the pie in a direction that's
right.
not there, you will take from something else.
Correct. Unless it's all in the same part of the pie.
And if you are talking about not using the F part of the tax increment financing, so with the exception of Dakin's Lake, and now the research park, and in any future conversations about the research park and where that goes. Story County has not, on any of these projects, borrowed money in order to
correct.
Fund them. So then it does become a zero-sum game of there's just over $1 million, which is growing a little,
mm-hmm.
but there's just over $1 million available in any one year, and the first deduction you have to make is any of those payments that are due to pay off the loans, and then you get to decide what kind of projects, housing or otherwise, if it qualifies as part of the plan, you're going to utilize the rest of it. But that does not eliminate, there is nothing in this plan that says for a certain project, the board couldn't decide that we were going to borrow some money, thereby in any one year going way beyond that $1 million that's available, as long as you can absorb what that payment would be.
Right. And kind of moving us back to the workshop. Remember when I was asking Lisa those several questions and we were trying to figure out exactly what
yep.
happened. And I, having not done this particular workshop before, Leanne, I didn't know if you were going to be actually bring us a worksheet showing us exactly where that money was and how much as we head into the requests or, you know, on April 4th, I guess, you know, tell people, okay, this is X number of dollars. This is what we think we have available.
And to this point, we've not done that. We've not been encouraging or discouraging based on available funding. We've said, bring us your projects. And then once we get the projects, then we've started to look at what kind of available funding we've had as we were looking at all the projects. One year, it feels like we didn't have enough money, that if we decided we were going to fully fund all the requests, we could have done it. We found a percentage that we could do, as I recall, and we did it. Every other year, I believe that available funding has met or exceeded the requests that were made. Now, that's not to say we can't change and try to come up with an amount beforehand, but to this point, we haven't said to our communities, you're competing for X number of dollars. We said, tell us what projects you have, and then we'll dig in and see what we can do.
Earlier today, and this is a very helpful conversation, afterwards I'm going to ask Leanne to help me communicate actually with Marion Cressy of Boost, which is interesting. We don't think about early childhood development interested in TIF money, but he brought it up to me today. There's a situation in Story City where they are very tight on child care, and there's long waiting lists up there. They're all private entities. One child care provider has gone out and talked to a church, and the church is willing to host daycare and host it as a nonprofit under a sliding fee scale, which would maybe qualify via the asset process, but the church needs $100,000 sprinkler system. to host it. Now, what I said to Marion this morning was, well, I know in the past some of the projects the cities have brought forward has had to do with building renovation. Now, I said go to Mark Jackson because our program is set up that the city has to bring the project forward. So you're going to have to convince Mark about it. You're going to then have to convince the city council about it. Am I correct in that?
So it feels like, Leanne, help me with this, it feels like to this point there's a requirement in here that says we can't spend dollars on anything that's not a not owned by a public entity.
And that was the other thing. Yeah, it's number four on the no tax increment rebate grants, loans, or assistance to private business. And recognition of government's limited appropriate role in the private business cycle, Story County will not use TIF funds to participate in a direct disbursement or rebate to a private entity. Is that what you're...
Yeah, that's what I'm referring to, but now I'm questioning what that means. So would that apply? So I think the intent behind that statement is we're not going to use TIF dollars to lure some private entity to come in. But does it mean you can't use it? Let me use this example. You can't use it to do some improvements on a church that's going to host something that's going to be for economic development. I don't know where I'd end up on a situation like that, but I think as I read this, I don't think with these current regulations we could do it without changing our regulations.
And then along those lines, making sure it was consistent with what was allowed in Iowa code, they used the TIF funds too.
So I did tell him my thought. I knew the private industry. We don't give it to a business, mm-hmm. Okay? But I told him I didn't know what that meant. And what the other thing I suggested to Marion is why you need to talk to Mark. Perhaps there is a publicly owned building that could host this and qualify for remodeling. I was on that. So that's... but. The broader umbrella here is that we had someone ask questions who were in early childhood development, not a typical, as we have thought of so far, economic development project, but there is clearly a need up there. And the other thing I suggested to Marion is in talking to Mark, if you have any kind of information at all, just how long those waiting lists are, and reach out to your employers up there, your big ones, and find out, are they having trouble with workforce development as a result of people not being able to find childcare. I mean, that's the road I went down looking at where this board has traditionally looked at putting assets in the past. But so as I said, I'll be referring that over to Leanne and Drew later. But there's an instance about where if we decide, even if it's a public building, but for that purpose, okay, we don't go down the road of looking at privately held. There's another competition for the money, so maybe not now, but maybe down the road is when we have to start looking at maybe there will be more projects coming to us than there will be money available.
Yeah, and I don't even think that's a bad thing, Loris, because then you're, you know, I'm a huge fan of survival of the fittest, and you get to the end of those kind of projects. I think it is really important that this board come to grips with this process and the policies so that we can start to move through amending it. And so, like, for example, what I'm hearing is that we're going to want to look. First thing we're going to want to do is we're going to want to determine as a board, are we discussing changes that take effect January of 2018, or are there immediate things that we feel like need to be changed in here? Once we decide that, then we can go through and determine if it's immediate, which ones of those things are immediate. If it's not immediate, then just what are we wanting to do with this document? But I think sooner rather than later, this board needs to come to a decision of, are we going to operate under these policies for 2017 or not? If the answer is, yeah, we're going to operate under these for 2017, then we got a little bit of space, a little bit of time, and we can get in April. If we're talking about changing these policies, I think we got to do it as soon as we can possibly do it for 2017. So if it's okay with you guys and Drew and Leanne, if you don't have anything else formal for this work session, let's just spend a minute and go through and discuss what we currently have step by step and see, no decisions being made, but kind of see where our conversation might head for 2017. Is that acceptable?
Sounds good.
Okay. All right, so let's just start at the top of the page. Those first two paragraphs, I just see that as the philosophy. Does anybody have a problem with the philosophy of why this document exists? And let's spend a minute on it, right?
Right. No, I have not.
Okay. Marty, you good with the philosophical statement?
Yep.
Okay. So, down to goals, objectives, and strategies, number one. The rationale behind sticking 50% in there is it still recognizes growth to all of our taxing entities. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I'm sorry. When you said the rationale, I went with the first two paragraphs.
Yep.
Now down to the next before we get to the percentage.
Okay. So let's start right there. TIF assistance and story count.
Okay. I'm a little concerned when it talks about enjoyment of the county, and then it talks about community improvement. As I've said before, I'm uncomfortable with so much of the money so far having been spent just on improvements that aren't going to directly yield back tax monies.
Absolutely. I get that. I've heard you loud and clear on that's a concern, but I don't know how that changes that paragraph. I mean, so that paragraph still can work with what you're talking about, right?
Right.
I don't think it eliminates that possibility.
Okay.
It's just the direction the board has gone. So is there some...
I would
be reluctant to add something that restricts it either way, even though in operation, I think it's completely fair. When you look at Dakin's Lake and the research park, right, that you could say, there's not a direct payback on that. There's an indirect, very clear indirect, right? We know that what's happening at Dakin's Lake is worth $1 million a year in economic opportunity. In new economic activity in Northeast Story County. That's a Mike Cox through Iowa State got that. You check with him.
Well, I did, and what I got back was not quite the same, but that's okay. We can talk about that fact later and how that information came. So, okay, I'm good with leaving that paragraph alone.
Okay, so percentage, the rationale behind the percentage was it still allows for tax-based growth to all of the different taxing entities. Primarily the one you worry about is the school districts, but it also impacts the townships. To a real, real minor extent, it impacts community colleges. Doesn't impact any of our municipalities with what we've done. So the idea there was, okay, we're going to do this, but half of the growth, right, everything's set on the baseline, and if you want to think about the wind tower, it's set on the baseline of what that ag ground brought in before the wind tower was built on it. Once the wind tower was built and it starts ramping up, is it 3 years before it starts ramping up?
I think it's, you're right, I think it's 3 years.
Yeah.
I think it's 3 years, and then it goes 5% a year over
for seven,
X number of years. But once it starts ramping up, every dollar that increased valuation brings in taxes, 50 cents of it is true growth to every one of the taxing entities. Right, the other 50 cents is available to utilize this, and then let's not lose sight of the reality today And I'm so happy that there's not a bill down in the State House right now that's dealing with it. But today, there is still a backfill for school systems, which means new dollars coming into the county.
Right.
Right? So talk about the 50%.
Well, I guess, Loris, if you're looking for new dollars, do you have any comfort of raising the 50% cap? Because that was implemented by the board.
I thought about that, maybe going to 60%, 40. I don't think that that's, we're there now. I certainly, you know, I have no problem leaving it with 50%, especially for the foreseeable future. The legislature is a bit of a unpredictable group right now. So it may be something we might have to look at the future, but every time that we would consider that, we know who we might hurt would be the school districts, and I'm not interested in that. So I'm good with the 50% certainly for next year.
The threshold start then.
Yes.
Okay. Just to let you know, I can't make any guarantees, but we're hearing that the Senate Ways and Means has no interest this session in TIF.
Yeah. In what?
In doing anything with tax increment financing.
Oh, good. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
I think they've bit off all they can chew for this session, their group. Okay, so we're good there.
Yeah.
Okay. School funding, that is just laying out there that if the Senate all of a sudden got interested, we would have to dig in immediately and recognize that this could really negatively impact schools. And it was intended kind of almost as the poison pill for this entire document, that if the state changes something, all of this is on the table.
Through the application process, that's clearly put out to all the entities applying, though, right, Leanne? And they realize that they can make application, have initial success, and there could be something done legislatively down through Des Moines that could say, sorry, but we can't do that, the funding this year.
I don't put it that bluntly. I think all of the entities that do apply, though, work close enough with both of us that they have a sense as to whether or not funding is going to be available.
Okay.
But
the board doesn't have to say yes to anything.
And what I do is, and I know Drew does as well, I keep my eye on what's happening in Des Moines. And this is always in the forefront that if I see something, even more doubly so now for me,
yeah.
If I see something that's going to raise the radar, I'm going to be right at your doorstep with it.
All right.
And then communicate that as necessary.
Plus the fact the way our program is designed, and we've been talking about it still continuing, is that these are cash awards. We're not borrowing so far to finance anything that's going to any of the municipalities.
Right.
We're
so
only
what
borrowing
we can't get out of, no matter what, we can't get out of what we owe. And the way that would negatively impact schools is if down in Des Moines they decided that they were doing away with the backfill retroactively. I don't believe that'll ever happen. I mean, politically, that's just a nightmare. When you look at what other entities have done with TIF, I mean, look at the cities that are using TIF, and what if you tried to do a retroactive, do away with backfill, what that would do to our school systems. I think reality is if they ever do look at doing away with backfill, they're going to say for any future projects. And so in my mind, we're reasonably secure with anything that's already done, just because I don't think it's politically tenable for them to retroactively do away with it.
I may be off a little bit on this percentage, but because of the tax agreement financing group I sit on, it's something like 67% of the school districts in our state are under TIF. Okay, so that yes, it would be an incredible disaster to pull back. I don't think they could do it.
Retroactively, yeah. Yep. Okay, so we're good with that one. No modifications that we can see right now there. So eligibility, what I'm hearing, we talk about all four and then the fifth one that I'm throwing out there, what I'm hearing is we want to add the potential for some kind of housing component as appropriate by state law.
Correct.
So that's going to create, that will be interesting to see how we massage that one mm-hmm. to still recognize number four, depending on if we want to talk about changing number four.
Right.
Is there anything else in eligibility that we don't like? Anything else we want to add or look at?
I don't know. I think I, up and other than housing, I think everything that I would ask to have there is there.
Leanne, we haven't spent anything on C, have we?
No, we had a potential application from the Nevada School District 3 years ago for fiber installation, and the cards were not, that it didn't line up like it needed to, so they withdrew it.
Yes, and so I would be fine if we wanted to consider, as we were considering adding some kind of housing component, to look at doing away with communication and utility infrastructure expansion.
I did that one. I take that back. That was how McCallsburg and Kelly water lines. The water looking projects.
Well, I was going to say too, I could see COLA looking at doing something with that for their housing project too.
And maybe that's the way you can support a housing project without going directly to a private entity.
And that is, as this, as I start to have conversations, allowing each community, I mean, a core component is allowing each community to decide what it needs. We still will have to deal somewhat with number four because so much of that percentage has to be for low and moderate income, and sometimes that ends up being only, unless we want to manage our own apartments, we've got to create some kind of entity, partner with some kind of entity to have the low and moderate income. But there's also, if they can offer it in a new subdivision, like in COLA, they don't want to, I mean, but and do it by us giving the utilities, then we stay away from that. So yes, I agree with that. Is that housing, to help develop housing in each community, is going to be very much weighted into what they need to help develop housing in their community.
Yeah, so having the full conversation of what the county's appropriate role is, as we see it, in either directly participating in developing the housing or participating in the foundational elements that are necessary for a different entity to develop the housing.
Right.
I think that'll be a fascinating conversation. I think there's a very clear line out there for where the county may or may not fall.
Right, so. As long as number four is in there. Yeah, because we have to, but Marty, yes, I agree with you.
Yep.
We'll have those discussions later on. To now just to get housing added to the eligibility is, I think, the first step, right?
Right, and the other thing I'm going to remind you, and Loris, you and I have had this conversation before, just because it doesn't qualify under TIF doesn't mean it would not automatically qualify somewhere else in the county budget. And so you just mentioned rehab of houses. Just because it's not a potential TIF program and we decide it's not appropriate within TIF doesn't mean we can't come back and carve out something else like we did. So being able to assist veterans with moving expenses to Story County, well, that doesn't qualify for TIF, but it doesn't mean we don't have it. So trying to balance all of that. Okay.
In the late 90s, there was a housing needs study done that Story County was partner with Ames. It was a countywide housing needs study. I'm probably preaching to a choir on this, but at part of the outshoot was a 20E agreement formalizing some of the recommendations in that study, and the Ames-Story County Housing Partnership was formed since it's dissolved. But, you know, Rick, you mentioned there's nothing to preclude Story County by putting funding into it. For 3 years, Story County put $90,000+ into that program to affect the provision of attainable housing.
And clearly that was not TIF because we didn't. Story County didn't utilize TIF at that point. Okay. Anything else on eligibility? Number four.
Um, private entity, could we say for-profit entity?
You could.
I mean, would you be open to that? The Story County Housing Trust Fund, obviously, is a nonprofit. Okay. The group that Leanne was talking about was a nonprofit.
I think you can talk about any of that. I think it makes a fundamental shift in what this is if it's not a public entity that you're dealing with.
We have limited ability, as long as we keep it to just a public entity, for true income production, you know, or tax, putting some things back on the tax roll. I think we have some limited opportunities.
Well, so the way we've handled that to this point is, and Drew, help me if I'm missing on this, it feels like both Collins and Ziering acquired buildings, applied and received funding, did their work, and then sold those buildings back into private hands after the fact. Is that accurate?
And Slater.
And Slater did it too.
Okay. All right.
Just another way to skin the cat. But when we provided the funding, we didn't provide any funding to any non-public entity.
The agreement was just up front that after they rehabbed it, they were going to put it back.
Well, their building.
Yeah,
we weren't maintaining any ownership or anything of a building.
But did we go in it with the agreement that they would sell it afterwards?
That wasn't anything that was formally in it, no.
So that
it was under. I don't think anybody hid it from us.
No. But it was never hidden. But yeah, like Ziering, for example, was right next to City Hall, the building they had there with the bait shop in it and things like that. And then also the New Cara piece too, where they did the work over there in front of New Cara.
Right.
They've been the most frequent user of that, and Collins both. Yeah.
And then they sold it to a private entity. But So we ended up returning it to the tax rolls.
Right.
But our actual gift remained while it was being utilized was under the public entity control.
Correct. We did not. None of our dollars went directly to a private entity.
Like when we're talking about Ziering and Collins, the way they mostly see it is, I mean, is the fact that they understand that if that building is not going to lay derelict and not used, they need to purchase it, acquire it, and then put the investment in it, and then get it back out there, because they don't see anyone else coming and banging down the door to try to make those improvements. So they then do that themselves and then divest themselves of it, because it's not really necessarily in their best interest either to serve as a landlord, except of their own public buildings.
Right. So to this point, it's just been the philosophy of the county being a funder rather than an owner.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, and I don't think we should become an owner. I really don't think that that's within our bailiwick or where we want to go.
Counties typically in situations like this are most appropriately funders, and we start to get sideways when the counties in Iowa are not equipped to be owners.
I agree with that. Yeah. So it's back to then giving to a private entity. So I'm back to why I asked about would you guys be open to changing it to a, we don't give it to a for-profit entity, but we would consider it for a private nonprofit.
Yeah, so I'm I think it's worth having the conversation. I'm struggling with that one. Yeah.
How do you feel about if a church had made application?
It's a nonprofit.
Would we have comfort giving public tax dollars to a church?
I got it. The purpose of this of the plan is either economic development or community improvement, and we do take a look at each plan separately. So certainly a church might come forward and they want to do a whole facade change, you know, on the outside, need to do some ADA requirements. that contributes to the vitality of that community. The fact that it is a religious organization, I don't think it wouldn't weigh in with me. It's more the quality of the project, not the activities that will go on within that project.
We would never get that on the tax rolls.
Yeah, I do understand that. Not that wouldn't go on the tax rolls. That's where this situation in Story City moves over to workforce development. Okay? And it's quite possible that the city would make the case. Because once I'm not asking that it not go through a city approval process and the city come ask for it, but the city may come in and make the case that this is not only where people hold church services, but we also could open a daycare here. And this happens to be where every community event gets hosted, because they're the only place that's got a basement big enough. That's quality of life / workforce development, as far as I'm concerned.
And now put on your journalist hat.
Yeah.
Write the story where Story County Board of Supervisors looks to give public dollars to church organizations.
Yes, and then I see this room filled, and I think that we start out with a policy right up front that say, here is what this application, as screened already by their city, says that this is going to do to the vitality of this community. And then we put that forward to them. I'm not afraid to have the discussion and face opposition for just because a building is owned by a religious group. If in fact that what goes on at that building contributes to that community.
And a lot of, in this county, a lot of your churches do wear several hats to
right.
serve their community.
I know that.
But there's a constituency and a substantial one of that wouldn't have a real qualm about public dollars going to what they perceive to be a religious organization, which in fact it would be, because I use this term loosely, but like the employer of record, because they would be the host entity. So I would say it's just like, you know, a person of faith, they're going to sit there and say, yeah. But I'm just telling you, I think that there, you know, that will be a discussion that will be prickling.
Well, I know that, and I'm a person of not faith, I guess, if you want to define that. So the fact that, you know, I'm willing to recognize that in our smaller communities, especially the buildings that are most able to continue to host the quality of life activities are in fact used for dual purposes. I hear what you're saying. It's just my response.
Well, I'm just
to
being
it,
the medical yeah. advocate on this because
yeah.
I think it's an enlightened take that you have, and I appreciate it. But it's just like I think that will have some unease.
And you are right. They won't return to the tax rolls. And I understand, you know, but when I say a nonprofit, we're talking nobody is going to return to the tax rolls. But at least I'm hoping that I'm preserving the tax rolls in those small towns. I would like to go with private entities, but I've heard that that's not going to be entertained. So I'm I misunderstood.
He's saying that.
Okay.
Anything is possible. I want to view this work session for us to have an open conversation
okay.
about where it could go. Don't take any of this for a second as anything's off the table for us
okay.
to consider on a Tuesday. We can consider anything. I want us to wrap. So if we come out of this work session successful, in my mind, we will have gotten you guys comfortable with where Story County is today and what rationale it used, previous boards used, to get where we are today. Then this board, this body, is the one who gets to decide how we're going forward. And I just want to make sure that we fully understand what the impact of any of this might be. So it's a fundamental shift. The philosophical intent of this policies and procedures, the process and policy that you see in front of you, will be fundamentally altered if we were to go to anything other than public entities. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm saying it is a fundamental shift over what we have today, and that's what I'm struggling with. Linda, you want to make a comment? Come up close enough so that we can get you on the recording just in case anybody actually listens to this thing. If anybody's listening, send me an email. Yeah, rsanders@storycountyiowa.gov.
Oh, that's working.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you. Linda Merkett, and I thank you for allowing me to have input. I was just sitting here listening to the conversation, and it dawns on me that what you're doing is kind of saying there may be an application here or there that we're not sure we'd be comfortable with or we're not sure the public would be comfortable with, so let's not go there to opening it up. But what I see there, what I think I see, is you might miss some really good opportunities to fund some things that do help for quality of life in various communities. You might have a hard decision. You might have to have the discussion, you know, of do, you know, when you get an application. But I think you're kind of closing the door prematurely. You don't know what might be out there. And I mean, you may from years of experience, but you don't know what might be out there the next year.
Yeah, so I agree with that to a point, Linda. My problem with it is we're talking about a really narrow segment of what the county does. These are TIF dollars, mm-hmm. and just because it's not an appropriate use of TIF dollars, and I'm not talking about legally, I'm talking about philosophically, wherever the Story County Board of Supervisors is, there are lots of things that won't be appropriate in this document, no matter how you write it. That does not, in my mind, eliminate the possibility of the Board of Supervisors considering contributing to something not using TIF dollars. And I'll use the community building, Morris, we were just in it the other night. Story County, did we fund $80,000? We funded $80,000 of that renovation over there because we thought it had a real positive impact to the community, but we didn't run that through the TIF program. We found that somewhere else. And so I'm sitting here thinking this through, and I'm struggling with it as I'm thinking it through. And in my mind, I'm utilizing a church in Story City because we don't have enough daycare in Story City, and that could be negatively impacting some economic development opportunities in Story City, and therefore we want to use TIF dollars for that. And I'm struggling with getting to the TIF dollars for that. I'm not necessarily struggling with the county participating in advancing some of those opportunities. In fact, we just heard Tuesday that we're going to have an opportunity to participate in $750,000 in upgrades that they're going to have to do at, is that ACPC?
Community preschool.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, we're already hearing that. But using TIF dollars to do that is different than using other dollars to do that. And that's where I'm struggling to reconcile this.
It is with your current definition.
What is that?
Using TIF dollars is different than using other dollars.
Correct.
Because you've got a definition that constrains you.
At no question, this entire document was about, it was about taking Story County from not having TIF to having TIF, which is a huge jump, but really, really constraining how much and what it was appropriate to be used for. There's no doubt that this document was intended to constrain.
He rolled this out in October of 12. He did refreshes at three different times. In the interim, between that day in October to today, did the public ever speak to you about this as a board?
About what?
Changing any of your, were you called out in open meeting? Were you asked in a private conversation to revisit? You know,
I think we had municipalities that wanted us to be able to use this for private entities, and we always said no. I think we had one major citizen, but a couple citizens who wanted us multiple times to just scrap the whole thing and do away with TIF.
I guess on a historic basis, what did you, as a previous board, address the community meeting? You know, this has obviously served this template since 2012, and here we are in 2017. What was the public's input to the previous board that would give merit to changing it? I'm not going anywhere. That's not a leading statement.
I think what Rick said, that a couple of municipalities asked, when I think of the smaller municipalities, and I even think about Dagan's Lake as a public entity, how much it changed. All right, like I said, I'm not sure about those numbers, but definitely there's a difference now up in Zeri. All right, so I understand that some of our public projects are significant in how we can go in and a public project can change.
But I wonder now if Zirin coming back, it may be next time around, they want. They would like to see, have the ability then to adjust a, you know, give some kind of development opportunity to a private entity up there. Because I think Zirin's about public doubt.
One of the things that comes out clearly when you have listened to the Story County Rec Center roll up to get to where they are today is the fact that they did not want to be a publicly funded entity competing against private. And they have several businesses here in town that are big stakeholders that they brought to the table.
Right.
And their configurement was that they would do things that probably didn't necessarily serve the model as best it could, but they acknowledged the fact that here were private entities, taxpayers, citizens in the community having, you know, successful taxpaying programs that they did not want to impinge upon. And I think if you moved it into the community, I'm most familiar with Nevada, you know, we have a school-run type facility, but we have a number of larger privately run too. The need exists. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you sat here and listened last Thursday to Ames early school story. That's pretty much anywhere. You're always going to have a waiting list because you're always going to have parents with special needs on work schedules and or child. You know, every family has a story that you're going to sit there and have. I guess that where I come at it is the fact that if you're allowing a church to take these dollars to meet a need, that's a lot of a goal. But if by taking these dollars you marginalize somebody that's already there providing services, then I think that you've taken somebody off the table that's paying taxes.
I've always, in the asset process, coming back, because they're somewhat related as we look at an expansion, I've always wondered about ACPC and the one in Maxwell,
mm-hmm.
Collins Maxwell. Okay, they get subsidy dollars, but I know that, you know, there's so many other facilities that don't. The university one does too, but they primarily serve university students. And I know, wasn't there a discussion in Nevada a couple years ago about trying to start a nonprofit one?
DuPont, when they were coming and citing Nevada, one of the things that they had asked for as they had looked at the community, that they would hopes that their presence would prompt a facility like this to come out of the ground. Still their stated goal.
Like the rec center?
Just an early child care facility,
right.
You know, like much like I would think Eagles Loft.
Right. Okay. So what you're saying, Marty, if I can re-sum here, is that if we start funding private entities, we may be funding one private entity against another private entity.
We run the real risk of picking winners.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the thing is, you know, if we are all, you know. You impart the ability to affect outcomes,
mm-hmm.
and that in turn means you pick a winner, which displaces at some point. There's only so many kids, there's only so many opportunities. You fund this, the likelihood they get or can sustain means somebody else either will or won't.
Okay.
Linda, anything else?
No, thank you for the opportunity.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay.
Just.
Okay. Yeah.
So we'll have, Leanne, as you take your notes, we're going to have the conversation about a housing component in number three, and we're going to have a conversation about not-for-profit rather than private entity, and I think it'll be a fascinating conversation. I'm just having trouble wrapping my head around it and what it means. Required match guidelines, what we said here is the maximum that we would fund in any one project is 75%. Have we gotten to 75% ever? It feels like we've been less than that almost all the way through, Leanne.
Yes, we've gone on a couple of them.
Let's see, we did for Colonesco Schools, I remember that. What else did we get to 75% on?
I just have the fund amounts. I don't have the project amounts.
Yeah. I recall us being a couple years we set a flat percentage that we funded of each project, of each request, regardless of how much they asked. And so we have the 75% max in there. I don't think we've approached it regularly.
Yeah, it hasn't been a commonality that every single application, there have been. Yeah, I don't. I'm sorry. I don't have the percentages.
So thoughts on the maximum of 75% of any one project?
I use your historic trend line, but that has not been a problem. I think it's fine.
Okay.
I'm fine.
If it works, you've got 5 years of experience to say whether it is or isn't, and I don't think that it has risen to the level that it should be.
Okay. So process, do we see any? This has changed every single year. We've been shifting timelines, really trying to get earlier every year.
And this has changed, like Rick said, every year earlier because we've learned our lesson every year.
Which is why I pushed back when we started this conversation about the possibility of changing something for calendar year 17. Simply because if we felt any real pressure in this whole process, it has really been the constrained timeline to have everything done and certified to the auditor by December 1st.
In that case, I withdraw my request that we discuss this further, and I will. I'm good then. Enough of a case has been made directly and indirectly about why
have
we
comfort.
Need, yeah, comfort with
leaving 17 as 17.
Correct, okay. Leaving 17 to 17, and then whatever we decide to change will be effective.
Well, and if I walked in as a new supervisor sworn in on January 3rd and I saw things that were instituted January 1st for that calendar year, I get on this specific example, it's just the reality of the timeline that we're dealing with.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for letting me express.
Absolutely. No. Yes. So all this, Leanne, are you seeing any issues where we currently have this timeline or do you think we found the sweet spot now on this timeline?
I hope we've found that, but we have yet to operationalize it. I think it ran much more smoothly last year. We added another month in, and we even added land we added more properties to the ordinance. Uh-huh. So if you add properties to ordinance, then we have three considerations. It's the behind the scenes, the legal notification requirements, the mailings, all that we have to build in. And I think the way we drafted, should work really well to our advantage. But a year from now, I'll tell you.
And so if we shifted back 30 days, is that what we've done over time? Now or are we more than that?
Yeah. Originally, it was September 1st.
September
1st.
And
then August 1st. And now last year it was July.
Yep.
I would think it was, the first Tuesday after the 4th of July last year?
Okay, so now we're all the way back to July 1st.
Yeah, or June, first part of June this year.
Okay.
For the actual applications. And that really, by having the taxing entities meeting as part of the Board of Supervisors meeting, helped out last year too to have everyone understand. It just helped the process run more smooth.
Thanks a lot.
Good, okay. And then the addition of TIF property. So we started with the 120-something wind towers that were primarily in northeast Story County. And since then, we've added roughly, Leanne, how many more? They're all wind towers.
Well, and better equipment.
And better equipment we added.
And that's a piece that I'm very guilty of just saying we TIF the wind turbines. We didn't just TIF the wind turbines. We TIF.
Right.
A substantial commercial property.
Yeah, that's a $4 or $5 million facility.
Yeah, it was $80,000 in ag ground, I remember looking one time. Yeah, taxable valuation of $80,000, and now it's taxable valuation of $5 million,
mm-hmm. I think. Yeah. This might be a question for Jerry, but you might know it too. Are there any other discussions on additional wind turbines being constructed in Story County? Have you heard?
Well, we've got four that we have not discussed adding yet, and you see them every time you drive between here and Ames, right? Those have not been...
We added those this year.
How did we add them before they were built?
The foundation was poured.
Yes, I remember.
So they are added.
We added them with this last round because as of January 1st, they were already...
Summer,
they
fall,
added
early
the
fall.
Tax rolls and starts.
You remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We made them free for ag land value.
Okay.
So we had to... This was our last year to add it.
Are Ryerson's turbines on?
Pardon me?
Are Ryerson's turbines out here?
Those are within the city limits, in Nevada.
We think that we have added every new commercial wind tower that's come on board.
I know.
Did you give us a number? We were 120-something. Have we added another 30 or 40?
Yeah, I think every time I count, I come up with a different number. I think it's like 148 or 152.
Okay. Could you just put five in Nevada alone last fall?
And there's one down by Maxwell.
Right.
There's two up by Story City. There's two or three down by Huxley.
Two.
Have we had any inquiries about another actual farm? You know, with several.
I think north of here, you're seeing actually they have office spaces in Bone for I think a Green County. You know, you have wind farms going around us, but as far as us being so fortunate to have one in Story County, probably not. Yeah, I know you can always hope.
No, what I am very recently been getting though is inquiries from other counties about our economic development policies and that shifting process.
Excellent. That's wonderful.
You've done right. Why is that?
So good, bad, or indifferent, we are more restrictive than any county I know of that's utilizing TIF. Clearly, the counties, and Lord, you know this better than I do, well, there are 40 counties that don't utilize TIF at all, mm-hmm. roughly. Clearly, they're more restrictive than us, by definition. But of the ones that actually utilize TIF, I think our policies are far and away the most restrictive.
Yeah.
Okay. Other questions for us today? Any other thoughts? Drew and Leanne, are you guys clear on where we're headed from here? The big takeaways that I heard, clearly this document, but talking about our contract with AEDC earlier this spring and figuring out what direction we're going with that as we move forward, because that's a July 1st renewal, right? That every year that renews July 1st. And so let's just talk that through. That should give you guys an opportunity. You told us there's a change in workforce and give you guys an opportunity to really look at what's happened in workforce and if there's any changes in primary responsibilities. Clearly, you've been our primary contact. I'd love that to continue. For me personally, I'd love that to continue, but I recognize the realities of life, and that is that things like that don't continue. Forever. And so we just like you and Dan to put your head together and figure out what this would look like going forward, and let's just have a conversation sooner rather than later on what that looks like.
Okay.
Okay.
Can you, just before we get out of here, can you tell me what happened with the Ames annexation down at Des Moines last week?
Yeah. At the City Development Board, that's an independent entity that's appointees through the Iowa Economic Development Authority, they have to approve annexations such as this. And what they had happen is we did our presentation. We had a full packet submitted 30 days in advance of the meeting. Charlie Quister from the city did that. And we were down. We did our presentation. Every I was dotted, every T was crossed. One member of the five-member board decided that they needed more time to consider the information, did not provide any additional details as to what they wanted to see, just said that they needed more time to review the application, and they're now voting on it on March 8th.
Right, the person who seconded the table,
he was
made
had the flu
statement
for,
that he was out sick and he had not read his packet.
Mm-hmm.
That's honest.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
Yes.
Yeah.
What does that do to the timeline of your stated annexation? Well, that delay will change your possession date to
we were thinking it was beginning of April, I believe, and now it'll be probably beginning of May now that it's a little set back because of the additional month.
Well, the memo is out there, and I just wanted to note a time with which to be able to say, no, this is not off the tracks, it's just delayed.
Oh, yeah, it's just delayed. They're just voting on it. They're giving a half an hour, I believe, in their agenda on the 8th, Wednesday, March 8th, the day after day at the Capitol, and doing that, then to pass it and vote it and give the persons, the two individuals that had voiced concerns, the ability to review the packet one more.
So, Drew, I was contacted by a citizen who was angry about the article that the Tribune wrote about it because the person said that the Tribune was wrong. So did they table or postpone, or did they actually close? The difference being, I guess, whether new information could be provided next month.
The motion was for tabling.
Okay. So
but as I understand it, it is a closed packet.
Yeah.
No new information.
Yeah. They can't do any new briefs. They can't. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. So, thanks for clearing that up.
Anything? Okay. Anything else for us?
No.
I take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Of course, we get done what we need to get
done. We're good.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Oh.